From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, Merry Christmas, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, this is a season of faith and family. We celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. Yes, yes, he is the reason for the season. And in this season of celebration, we have an even keener focus on family. Now, we're going to do a special edition of Washington Watch today, focused on one issue. And in the last decade, few developments have impacted the family more than the growing crisis of opioid addiction. Now, let me give some perspective on the size of the crisis. I'm going to go back to 55 years, to 1963. And there were 186 deaths in that year due to drug overdoses. That was 0.1 per 100,000. Now, in the year 2018, several cities and states have declared death by drug overdose as a crisis, with an average of 198 people dying every day. That was the latest numbers from last year. That's almost 20 per 100,000, if the math is correct, with nearly 70% of those deaths caused by opioids. Now, in the late 1990s, pharmaceutical companies reassured the medical community that patients would not become addicted to opioid pain relievers, and healthcare providers began to prescribe them at greater rates. Well, increased prescription of opioid medications led to widespread misuse of both prescription and non-prescription opioids before it became clear that these medications could indeed be highly addictive. Now, just last year, Trump administration's Department of Health and Human Services declared a public health emergency and announced a strategy to address what's been recognized as an epidemic. So just how significant is the crisis? What impact is it having upon our communities and our families? And most importantly, what are some of the underlying causes? And is there hope for the addicted and their families? Those are the questions we plan to tackle in this special edition of Washington Watch. And to do that, we've assembled an A-list of guests. On this edition of Washington Watch, we'll look at the growing epidemic from a legislative perspective, law enforcement, the new burden on foster care, and the efforts of faith-based ministries to help those who are addicted and their families. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Dr. Roger Marshall, who represents the 1st Congressional District of Kansas since coming to Washington. He's been a champion for bipartisan legislation to help communities bolster their efforts to fight the opioid and addiction epidemic. And the opioid epidemic is having an even greater impact on law enforcement. We'll talk with John Dowdy, director of the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics. The opioid crisis is so widespread, foster care systems are seeing an increase of children needing foster parents as well as drug-exposed newborns. We'll talk with Dr. Lisa Jassen, a neonatal nurse practitioner and clinical director of Bridget's Path, Ohio's first newborn recovery center. And nothing beats the power of a testimony. Farley and Susan Barge, the founders of Navigate Recovery, will share with us their story of recovery and discuss how faith-based ministries are helping the addicted. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss any of this, I would encourage you to go back and you can see listen to the archive later and also share it with your friends. Again, that website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Back in 2015, more than 50,000 Americans died of drug overdoses. Those numbers have grown dramatically with each passing year. This has now been declared a crisis in America. And our first guest, we'll take a 30,000-foot view from a national perspective and what is being done here in Washington, D.C. to address this epidemic. With us now is Dr. Roger Marshall. He represents, as I mentioned, the 1st Congressional District, which is known as the Big First of Kansas. It encompasses 63 counties in western and northern Kansas, really more than half the state. It's a huge district. It is the 12th largest congressional district geographically in the nation. He co-sponsored the Addiction Recovery for Rural Communities Act that seeks to help rural Americans better leverage United States Department of Agriculture rural development programs to combat opioid and heroin use. Dr. Marshall, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me on. I'm just so grateful you'll give us some time to talk about this true epidemic, maybe the biggest health epidemic we have going on
Well, Congressman, let's start first from your practical experience in why this is a driving issue for you.
You know, certainly, I'm a physician, practicing obstetrician and gynecologist for 25 years in rural America. And what we saw across the state, across the country, is increasing numbers of people becoming addicted to opioids. And where today, 115 people die every day. Every 12 minutes, somebody dies from an opioid overdose. You know, this is more people that we've lost in the military the past 5, 10, 20 years combined. So it's a huge problem. The president declared a war on the opioid issue, so I'm all in. Just think about how this impacted the family. You know, your own Family Research Council talks about the number of foster children that's going up 15 to 30%, mainly because they're losing their parents to this horrible issue. So the past 10 years before my eyes as a physician, I've seen it become a problem. So I'm trying to bring real solutions to Washington, D.C.
Now, Dr. Marshall, in June, this past June, Congress passed H.R. 6, the Substance Use Disorder Prevention, that promotes opioid recovery and treatment, support for patients and communities act, which is called. What's at the heart of this? I know, obviously, the overprescription, as I said in my opening, the drug manufacturers kind of led doctors to think this wouldn't be as addictive. So these things are addictive in nature. But are there some other underlying causes here that we're not really focused on?
Right. You know, if I could just back up, like you said, at the 30,000-foot level. So through Congress, what we tried was a three-pronged approach. Number one is let's prevent the illegal opioids coming across the borders. Number two is we wanted to decrease the demand, which is kind of what this bill is addressing. And number three is provide more treatment for addiction. So this legislation it was one of probably three or four pieces of legislation. So if you don't mind, we just talk about that three-pronged approach. Number one, preventing opioids from coming into the country. We did several things. You know, number one is a lot of the fentanyl. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that you could manufacture. And a lot of this was coming from China through the U.S. Post Office, U.S. Postal System, believe it or not. So we ramped up some money for the U.S. Post Office to be able to use more dogs, more of the drug dogs, which, by the way, they even sniff this stuff. It can kill the dog. It's so strong, 50, 100 times stronger than typical Percocets or oxycodone that most of us are familiar with. And then, fortunately, I don't know if you saw the news, but in this 90-day truce with China, President Trump got them to step up their prosecution of people making this.
Right.
Even potentially giving people the death penalty. So, and number three is we need to secure the southern borders where a lot of these opioids come across as well. So number one, let's prevent it from coming into the country.
So that as well speaks to the president's desire to secure the border. And, of course, the president's pretty strong on these issues. His administration has been very, very concerned about this and really – I see this as one of those issues as I've had communication with the president and his team. This is, I would almost say, a personal issue. They want to make sure that these families are not minimize the impact that we're seeing on families as a result of this drug addiction.
You're absolutely. I think it is personal. If you think about what President Trump, he basically made a checklist of things he wanted to get accomplished. And one of them is border security. So I think it is personal. I think that's the number one issue we're going to face here. If the Democrats may choose to close down the government rather than give the president funding for this, for the border wall. So we need the border wall. We need security for a lot of reasons. But to me, one of the most important reasons is to stop illegal drugs, let alone the 10 terrorists that are coming across the border every day. So it is absolutely personal. And I think the president is caught on in this particular case.
Now, as a part of the stemming the flow of drugs, that's long been a problem. But the nature of these drugs is that they're so addictive that it's
right.
It's very difficult once someone becomes – and I would venture to say there's hardly a person that probably listening to this that doesn't know someone who has either been affected by this or personally they've been affected by this. It's, I mean, I actually had just recently a neighbor who overdosed and had first responders not been there within a short order of time to provide assistance, he probably wouldn't have made it. So, I mean, it's very prominent, and
right.
It's not this is not happening in back alleys like
exactly.
We're accustomed to with drug overdoses. These are not people in crack houses. These are people that are on average streets everywhere in America.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, we need to realize this can impact anybody. Opioid addiction doesn't care how much money you make, which side of the railroad track you live on, as we used to talk about. And that's why we tried to devise legislation that would help impact everybody. And one of the things we have to be careful in Washington is sometimes we overreact. And what we've learned is one size doesn't fit all. So what we tried to do with our legislation, by the way, we've appropriated $10 billion. That's a huge amount of money. $10 billion to help educate doctors, nurses, to help educate patients. So what we've learned, and we want those resources going to more on a local level, to the local state level, rather than Washington saying, here's one prescription for everybody. So what we know is about maybe 5 or 10% of us have this gene of addiction. So as people enter medical care and they say they need surgery, and they're going to need post-operative pain management, we're going to try to identify the people most at risk. Some real simple questions probably could help to answer that. If you're on antidepressant medicine, never been on any psychiatric medicine, if you've ever had a problem with alcohol before, you know, those are the people that are at risk for this. But beyond that, what we've learned is we can probably get by with giving a little less pain medicine while you're in the hospital. Right. And maybe they'll just be on it for 2 weeks or 4 weeks. So we're trying to educate physicians, educate those nurses, and educate the public that, look, you're going to have some pain. For some reason, society the last decade has been telling patients, look, you should never have any pain. But you know, pain is a signal from your body that something's wrong. So we've had a lot of education, but we're also doing a lot of grant money to help educate the public and then help local people, local organizations, and hopefully faith-based organizations will have the opportunity to participate in these grants for treatment.
And we're going to talk later in the program with some of those faith-based organizations that take a holistic approach to dealing with these addictions. Dr. Marshall, Congressman Marshall, thank you so much for joining us today, and appreciate the leadership you're providing on this important issue.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. We're going to keep working hard at it. We're going to win this war on opioids. Just wish you and all your listeners a very, very good.
All right. Thank you so much. Dr. Roger Marshall represents the 1st Congressional District of Kansas. All right. Coming up next, America's first responders, including law enforcement officers, are increasingly likely to encounter the effects of opioid addiction. We'll be talking with John Dowdy, director of the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics, next. Don't go away. More of this special Washington Watch to come.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Together, we will work to ensure religious liberty for all Americans is upheld, unborn babies in the womb are protected, and biblical values are honored in our country. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled by a generous challenge match. Any donation is tax deductible. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/2018 to donate. Again, that number is 1-800-225-4008 and frc.org/2018. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
We're inviting you to join other like-minded people and become a Stan member. We want to build stronger relationships with listeners like you and provide resources to strengthen your faith and equip you to stand for the values that matter to you of life, marriage, and religious freedom. By joining this growing network of engaged believers, you'll receive a copy of Tony Perkins' book, No Fear, detailing courageous Christians standing for truth. And for a limited time this month, we will also send you a copy of Pastor Carter Conlon's book, It's Time to Pray, that illustrates how God's power can change everything. Take action today and become an FRC Stan member for $17 a month. That's just 56 cents a day. To join, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/stan. That's 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/stan. Thank you for partnering with us. The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to this special edition of Washington Watch. Merry Christmas. Hope you are making all those preparations to spend time with family and friends. But don't forget the reason for the season, the celebration of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But as we focus on family, we are focusing today on an issue that probably is one of the greatest threats to the family in terms of impacting the family today, and that is drug addiction, overdoses, in particular the opioid crisis. As I stated at the top of the program, in the last 55 years, we've seen a huge spike in the number of people dying each year because of drug overdoses. You know, go back, as I mentioned, I just want you to get these numbers in your mind. In 1963, according to the CDC, there were 186 deaths during the entire year due to drug overdoses. Now, latest numbers I saw in 2017, it was over 70,000 people died during the course of the year, almost just under 200 per day on average. Now, 70% of those are due to opioids. Now, law enforcement agencies are really on the front lines of this in many ways. In fact, I made reference to this earlier about a neighbor who was in my neighborhood that was affected by this, and it was law enforcement that administered Narcan that basically it's now a frontline defense to bring people back from drug overdoses. Back when I was a police officer, you never thought of these things. But it's now an everyday affair for many law enforcement agencies. But they're doing a lot of other things to deal with this crisis. And it's impacting, quite frankly, it's impacting policing in many, many different ways. As I speak to law enforcement officers, as I'm still affiliated with them, this is having a huge impact on the capacity of law enforcement to do their job. And joining us now is John Downey. He's the director of the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics and chairman of Mississippi Governor Bill Bryant's Opioid and Heroin Task Force. John, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Glad to be with you this morning.
Just give us a sense of how this crisis has impacted law enforcement, how you've had to change, really, in many ways, focus. You've had to reallocate resources. Just give our listeners a sense of how significant this has been for law enforcement.
Well, this particular crisis has created a challenge unlike anything we've seen in law enforcement in many, many years. And the reason that it has created such a challenge is because as you look at the opioid crisis, you know, primarily what we have to deal with are pharmaceutical drugs, which are Schedule II narcotics. And the source of these drugs is oftentimes a legal source. But because of the demand on the street from the addiction crisis that this epidemic has created, now we're having to combat it not only from the legal source and the potential diversion of these pharmaceuticals from a legal source, but we're also now having to deal with it on the black market by way of the increase in the number of pharmacy burglaries that we are having to respond to, in which these individuals are going into pharmacies and stealing primarily Schedule II opioids and putting those on the street. Then we're having to also deal with the counterfeit opioids that we're starting to see the market flooded with that are coming primarily from the cartels in Mexico.
So what are some of the secondary effects of this as you deal with the addiction? You mentioned the burglaries of the pharmacies. Is this creating a rise in other aspects of crime?
Well, I think it is. You know, I talk to law enforcement officers all across the state of Mississippi on a weekly basis. You know, one of the things we're seeing is, you know, when you have a home invasion, most of the time, the normal things that are taken in a home invasion are guns, jewelry, and cash. But now we're seeing more and more homes being burglarized, those items taken, but also pharmaceutical drugs that are being kept in the house that had been unused or are currently being used. And it does create a massive problem for law enforcement, you know, pharmaceutical diversion from hospitals and or pharmacies by individuals that work there or who gain access to it creates another area that it may not be a forced in break-in type situation to a hospital or pharmacy, but it may be somebody on the inside that just starts removing these drugs, and it has created quite the challenge.
John Dowdy, as you mentioned, you're out there with law enforcement officers that are on the front lines each and every week. Give us a sense quickly how their job really has changed. I mean, in some ways, they're now acting as counselors, doctors, I mean, first responders, saving lives. I mean, this has really changed the way law enforcement officers do their work.
It really has, and we instituted a program last year starting to train law enforcement across the state of Mississippi in the use of Narcan. We probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 7,000 law enforcement officers have been trained and equipped with Narcan across the state. The success rate of this has been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. There have been over 70 individuals that have been whose lives have been saved as a result of this. But it is very taxing on local law enforcement, sheriff's departments, as well as the Bureau of Narcotics, because, you know, you're having to deal with more people that you're confronting that are in potential overdose situations or who are impaired by something that is not easily detected, like right. alcohol or maybe marijuana. And so, you know, the fight on the front line is extremely difficult.
And you know, stressful for those officers. I mean, it has increased the stress of being a police officer out there, having to determine, you know, what's driving this person, what's affecting them. John Dowdy, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us and appreciate your insights on the effect this has had on law enforcement. Folks, don't go away. Another vulnerable group here that, you know, almost gets missed are the children. A rise in foster care as a result. We talk about that next.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Together, we will work to ensure religious liberty for all Americans is upheld, unborn babies in the womb are protected, and biblical values are honored in our country. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled by a generous challenge match. Any donation is tax deductible. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/2018 to donate. Again, that number is 1-800-225-4008 and frc.org/2018. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Merry Christmas and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. I encourage you to download our app, the Stand Firm app. That way you'll get alerts on legislative issues and you'll get notifications when it's time to listen to Washington Watch. Also, it's a great way to listen if you don't have a station in your area. So share it with a friend. All right, continuing in this special edition of Washington Watch focused on, one of the things that is impacting our society in a very profound way, and people are now beginning to see it. It's been declared an epidemic by the Trump administration. That is the opioid crisis. But one of the things that is often overlooked in this, in fact, I didn't see it at first until I started having some conversations. And what we see happening is that many children whose parents are affected by the opioid crisis, either addictions, many dying as a result of these addictions, or in treatment. Some of these children are going to live with parents, others or other family members. But a growing number are being placed in the foster care system, which in many states is now struggling to keep up with the demand. And that's why part of the whole debate we've been having over adoption agencies and foster care system is so important, because there is a huge need for families out there. But we're also seeing a growing number of drug-exposed newborns, babies born drug-exposed, otherwise known as neonatal abstinence syndrome, NAS, and they need medically supervised withdrawal after birth. Now, to meet this need, Bridget's PATH was founded. It's a children's crisis care facility that is family-centered and provides medical care for drug-exposed newborns to address this growing need. And, of course, Ohio is one of the states that's been impacted in a very significant way by the opioid addiction. With us now is Dr. Lisa Jason. She's a neonatal nurse practitioner and the clinical director at Bridges PATH, Ohio's first newborn recovery center. Dr. Jason, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much.
Well, did you explain to us kind of how you've seen the growth of the need for helping newborns come off of this drug exposure that they've had as a result of this opioid crisis?
Well, I started seeing an increase in about 2008, 2009 at community hospitals. Nurses were telling me that they constantly had babies who were born drug exposed and were in withdrawal, and they needed education about how to care for those babies. And when we hit about 2011, 2012, we had seen the numbers of babies skyrocket. And in my own neonatal intensive care unit, there were always 2 to 3 babies that were in withdrawal and requiring intensive care. And through some research and quality improvement projects throughout the state of Ohio, we recognized that these babies don't always need neonatal intensive care beds. They don't need to be cared for in an environment where there's lots of beeps, bells, buzzes, and commotion, that they can be cared for in a home-like environment. And they actually thrive and sometimes do better in that home-like environment where there's low-tech solutions like holding babies skin to skin and keeping moms and babies together so we can give moms some tools for how to help their babies through their withdrawal.
So, Dr. Jason, what's the success rate in helping these newborns overcome the exposure to this addiction? Are they able to move on and lead normal, healthy lives?
That depends on a number of things. It's often multifactorial. There's usually not just one problem. Moms who are pregnant and drug using and not in treatment often suffer from a lack of prenatal care, lack of nutrition, sometimes lack of home, lack of medical care, period. And when you combine all of those things with substance exposure, then you get more problems. You may deliver prematurely. You may have babies with infections. Those kids that have multiple exposures often have multiple needs that we need to follow. Babies whose moms are in treatment, whose moms are functional with substance use disorder, and there are lots of people that you would look at and go, oh, that's not somebody that uses drugs. Well, yeah, it's somebody that's very functional and has a functional life while they are using drugs. Those babies, depending on what other exposures they have, seem to be doing very well. And at Bridget's Path, with a small number, about 30 babies, our babies so far have done incredibly well in a low-tech environment with very intensive parenting support and intensive one-on-one adult-to-baby care. So those babies aren't lying in cribs crying, not getting overstimulated, and really receiving, like I said, that low-tech, non-medicine care. We do give meds. Don't get me wrong. Some babies have to have medications. But by and large, the interventions that our nurses and our volunteers, our patient care assistants, and our parents provide is much more developmental in nature than it is medication-oriented.
And it's really a fraction of the cost, and it's a significant cost that when you look at the volume here. In 2015, there were 2,100 babies born with NAS in Ohio. That was 15.8 infants per 100,000 live births. That's quite a high number. Dr. Jason, we're up against a break. Can you hold on? I want to ask you a couple questions about the impact on the foster care system, if you can stick around with me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Okay, folks, don't go away. Dr. Lisa Jason continues with me on the other side of the break. I hope you will as well. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom. Together, we will work to protect life, marriage, and religious liberty in our country. If you give before December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/2018. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
Don't miss your opportunity to join other like-minded people and become an FRC Stand member. Join today and you'll receive empowering resources like Tony Perkins' book, No Fear, and for a limited time, Pastor Carter Conlon's book, It's Time to Pray. So become an FRC Stand member for $17 a month. That's just 56 cents a day. To join, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/stand. Thank you for partnering with us for the sake of America.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch. It's that time of year, faith and family come into focus. And as we're focusing on family, we cannot help but address a growing threat to the family, and that is the issue of opioid addiction, which has been declared an epidemic. Been focusing on that all day today, today's program. Continuing our conversation with Dr. Lisa Jason here in, for just a moment, and then we're going to turn to the impact that faith-based ministries have had taking a holistic approach to addressing this addiction issue. But first, Dr. Jason, thanks for sticking around through the break. I want to get a sense of, you know, Ohio being one of the, which is interesting for me. I was born in Ohio, grew up there for the first 14 years before moving to Oklahoma. And so I stay very much connected with Ohio. They've been really hard hit by this opioid epidemic. Talk a little bit about the impact it's had on the foster care system there.
At Bridget's Path, we work closely with the Children's Services Bureaus in the counties surrounding us. And what we're being told by Children's Services is that foster care systems are overwhelmed. And what we're being told by foster parents is they're frequently getting phone calls. So when you have parents who now have more education but who don't know the special needs of a baby with neonatal abstinence syndrome, we have an opportunity to provide education for foster care parents and or foster parents. And the children's services in the counties have recognized that and started offering that as well. Other various foster agencies have started recognizing that. I have to say our goal at Bridget's Path is to not send babies into foster care, but they can stay with us longer than they could stay in a hospital while a family member is identified. So all but one of our babies have been able to go home with what we call a kinship care provider. So through our efforts at Bridget's Path to work with the family members, we've been able to keep the babies with us as opposed to going into foster care, so we can take a little bit of the burden off the system while family members are going through whatever judicial children's services paperwork that they need to go through, any legalities, so that babies that come through Bridget's Path don't necessarily have to negatively impact the foster care system. Moms can stay with them while they're at Bridget's Path, and then they go home to kinship care, sometimes with a safety plan, sometimes with guardianship with that family member.
Well, and that's a preferred path, quite frankly, not only from the impact upon the cost to society, which obviously is a factor, but for the benefit of that child to stay within the family is always the preferred path, especially if you can provide the training and support. And I should mention this, that as we were talking about the cost, the cost on, according to statistics that I've seen, those babies with NAS that are treated within the hospital setting, it's on average about over $61,000 per stay. Bridget's Path is privately funded, and the work that you do is made possible by grants and donations. And so not only are you alleviating the stress on the public sector, but the focus there is to the welfare, both physically, emotionally, of the child and the family. So I applaud you for the work that you're doing. And we've got your website up. Folks can find out more at your website about the work of Bridget's Path?
Yes, absolutely. And our website is bridgetspath.org.
And you don't mind if people support you either financially?
We love when people support us. We've always said that this is a community problem that deserves a community response, and our community has responded in spades. They have been phenomenal, and the fact that we exist and we're able to be ongoing is absolute testimony to that.
Well, we want to encourage our listeners, not only in Ohio but elsewhere, to come alongside those ministries that are working out there to help meet the needs in the wake of this crisis. Dr. Jason, thank you so much for taking time out to join us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Dr. Lisa Jason. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the link's over, and I would encourage you, check out the website. And if there's a ministry here that you can support and encourage, a lot of folks looking this time of year, the end of the year, where to invest the resources they've been blessed with. If you like what you hear, check it out. But there's more to come. I want to transition now to other faith-based ministries that are working on focusing on a holistic approach, which I believe is key to addressing any form of addiction. Well, unfortunately, when we talk about this holistic approach, one of the obstacles is that there is a stigma associated with addiction, which can cause individuals who need help to hesitate to seek that help. Now, Navigate Recovery Gwinnett is an organization challenging that stigma by recognizing addiction as a chronic condition and meeting sufferers with respect and dignity. Gwinnett is a community struggling with addiction, and Navigate Recovery Gwinnett is shifting the approach to treating addiction to helping those suffering and in right there in their community. Joining us now is Farley and Susan Barge, the founders of Navigate Recovery, which is located in Gwinnett County, Georgia, suburb of Atlanta, Georgia. Farley and Susan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
You have a particular interest in this because you've experienced it. Share with our listeners briefly kind of your story and how you got to this point where you're helping other people.
Well, we're both people in long-term recovery ourselves, so we have that personal experience as well, but we also have a family experience. We have many family members that have experienced addiction on a variety of levels, but it really came home for us when one of our daughters experienced a problem and for an extended period of time. And we realized that as much as we knew about addiction and recovery, we were really pretty powerless when it came to trying to help her because of the gaps that really existed in our current system of care. And as we began to, as lay leaders in recovery and in our church and recovery ministry, we began to encounter other families that had the same experience.
Susan, let me ask you what the road of recovery was like for you.
My issues, I've been a person in long-term recovery for 33 years, and my initial experience was with a 12-step program, which as I worked through that program, realized that they were asking me to have a spiritual experience for long-term recovery, and being totally unchurched at the time and not being willing to step foot in a church because I thought that would they would judge me, I was working those steps and encountered that 12th one where I needed to have that spiritual experience, and being unchurched and unsure of how to do that, I just started laying on the floor praying that God would reveal himself to me. And he did in a very powerful way in my car as I was driving down a road in Atlanta, Georgia. And he completely took the desire for drugs and alcohol away from me at that point in time. And I came into the church very excited that we were going to change the world because now I knew who the higher power was. And what I found was that the church wasn't really ready for that 33 years ago. We've come a long way. I was instrumental with Barley in starting several Celebrate Recoveries in multiple churches. But after doing that, we felt like God was sending us out into the community to reach more people and bring them back into the church environment.
Well, that's interesting in your story, Susan, and I think that when we talk about a holistic approach, oftentimes the underlying issues there in the drug addictions that are plaguing our society can only be really addressed from that spiritual component. So I'll throw this up to either one of you. What role do you believe that faith-based organizations can have or should have in this current opioid crisis?
Well, I would say that they have a huge role. We know that when people are typically, when they need help, they're most likely to seek out two individuals. They're most likely to seek out their doctor for advice or their pastor. And unfortunately, in both those professions, they have very little training about addiction and the science of addiction and what causes addiction and how to treat addiction or even how to give good advice. So they're just ill-equipped to do that. And so if we can go to the church, if we can go to them and educate them in about addiction, the science of addiction, how we got here, what the scope of the problem is, and how we can begin to change our perception that it's not just a moral failing, that we just need to stop doing what we're doing, that there's physiological and emotional reasons that people are acting out and doing what they're doing that they can't control. And we need to be able to understand that like many other conditions, that there are steps that we need to take in order to help them. We wouldn't ask someone with diabetes, for instance, to stop taking their insulin. So we need to think about it in those terms. And I think it's just an education part. If the church begins to understand it and they're not so fearful of it, they're more accepting of it. And it would really make the church a safe place to begin to talk about addiction, accept addiction, and really help people open their arms to people and love them as we're called to do.
Susan, we just got a few minutes left, and in responding to Farley and saying that there is a need, there is a role, and you mentioned 33 years ago the church wasn't ready. I'm not sure that they're better equipped, but probably not the way they need to be. How can they be? What can they do?
Well, we have an initiative here at Navigate Recovery that I would recommend any recovery organization start, and that is to go into churches and educate not just the pastors and the church staff, but small group leaders. A lot of times people are intimidated to come to their faith leader and talk about their issue in their family, although it's kind of an unspoken thing. But if we all raised our hand in church, wouldn't we all have a family member, right? But we go in and educate people so that the frontline people, maybe the small group leader is the person that gets that call in the middle of the night. My child is in the hospital with an overdose, or my son landed in jail last night and I don't know whether I should get him out or not. We educate the frontline leaders in faith communities so that they're better equipped, that when that person does reach out for help, they know that it's a safe place, and that person has some good advice for them.
Well, and as you shared, Susan, this is, and Farley, you touched on this, a great opportunity of ministry for the church. When people are hurting, they look to the, either their doctor or they look to a pastor, a spiritual leader. This is a great opportunity for ministry, because this problem at this point, and I'll ask you this, Farley, I have my perspective, but is this problem getting better or worse when we look at the opioid epidemic?
Well, it really depends on who you talk to, but unfortunately, the most recent numbers indicate that it's not getting any better at this point. Some things have shifted a little bit. I think we're starting to get a grasp of maybe the prescription piece of it, the over-prescribing of opioids.
Right.
We're only at the outset of that. But certainly on the illicit side and the part where so many people who were unfortunately became addicted, probably because they were following their doctor's orders and then were cut off, had gone to illicit drugs, and that part is escalating with the infusion of fentanyl and other synthetic opioids into the marketplace. And so we're making some progress in some areas, but there's still a long way to go.
Well, Farley and Susan Barge, I want to thank you for joining us today, and thank you for the work that you're doing there in Georgia. And I'm going to encourage people, especially pastors and others, lay leaders, that would be interested in getting their church more involved in this frontline ministry to connect with you. So, folks, thanks for joining us, and Merry Christmas to you, Farley and Susan.
Thank you so much. Christmas to you.
All right, Farley and Susan Barge. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. Look, you heard it from them. They're on the front lines. They're now outside the church ministering in the community. But the church has a role to play in this. It's the holistic approach, dealing with the spiritual man. And oftentimes, the underlying issues here have to be dealt with, and it's spiritual. So see how your church can be involved in meeting this crisis that's facing our nation. Folks, out of time. Thank you for joining us in this special edition of Washington Watch. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you could do, when you've prayed, you've prepared and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.